to First Things First. Good morning, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We got a big show today, lots to talk about. Alexi Lalas is going to join us live from Russia. Talk about the big game yesterday. That was an incredible game. Sarah Kustak is here. She's going to talk Carmelo and Boogie and other one-name superstars. And Eli Manning will open up on Odell Beckham Jr. because we are inching closer to football, and it is very exciting.
Sounds fantastic. Let's do it.
We've got a good three-hour show, so strap in. Here we go. We're going to lead, though, with the Lakers. A year ago at this time, I'll tell you what we didn't lead our show with. We didn't lead our show with the point guard battle on the Los Angeles Lakers. Also, we didn't have a show a year ago, so we definitely did not lead with that.
But we wouldn't have otherwise.
Probably not. Point guard battle this year is worthy of some chatter. Lonzo Ball enters year two. Rajon Rondo just got signed to a one-year deal. Oh, and LeBron James now plays on the team. Lonzo versus Rondo. Here's Lakers head coach Luke Walton.
Well, I think it's going to be great for Lonzo. You know, Lonzo to me is a player that he even shines more with the more talent that's around him because he's unselfish, he's a winner, and he wants to get, you know, other people involved all the time. So, you know, when you get shooters and all-stars around him, I think that just brings out what he does best, and he's going to continue to develop his personal game as well. So obviously, between the injuries, and how much we struggled last season when he was out, we felt like it was important for us to get another point guard that we could rely on when, you know, if he were to continue, you know, dealing with those type of injuries. And we feel very confident that Rondo is that guy. We also think Rondo can really help teach Lonzo the NBA game and the nuances of the point guard position because they both play the game in an unselfish manner. So they're going to be a good mix for each other.
All right, CeCe, assuming Lonzo is healthy to start the season, based on what you saw from him in year one, what are realistic expectations now for Lonzo Ball this coming season?
I think the only way you can really have realistic expectations is maybe go back and look at some other NBA players, maybe players that you like now, maybe players now that are all NBA players, and you're like, well, I wonder where they were when they were rookies. I remember all the lack of belief in Steph Curry. When he was at Golden State, him and Mark Jackson, that organization at one point, they didn't have the faith in Steph Curry that they had now. Remember Kawhi Leonard as a player in San Antonio, great system, young player on a great team, but it's about development. James Harden, he was a backup at OKC. So sometimes I think that we forget what this NBA is about. First of all, it's about the best basketball in the world. These are the best athletes in the world. So even the star players that come from college, we should have a baked in into the equation. They're going to struggle somewhat. This is not what guys do, jump from college to the pro and just dominate. So I expect him to keep developing. I expect us to see a different guy as far as his body, his overall body. I expect him to be a little heavier. His understanding of the game, I think, will only increase. I think his shot will get better. He will be playing with better players. So not only Rondo, LeBron, but the guys he played with last year having another year of chemistry. And also, I think sometimes failure, especially when you're young, is the best teacher. And that's what we saw as guys coming into the NBA, and that's what we saw with Lonzo. He couldn't dominate games. He couldn't log long minutes. He had problems with his knee and other things. So understanding what the NBA life is about, but my expectation is to continue, just like those other players, I want to see him grow. I want to see his shooting percentage get higher. I want to see him average around 15, 16 points a game. I like how unselfish he is with the ball, but let's see how the locker rooms change. Let's see how much maturity and leadership that he can show around guys that have been NBA champions, guys that have been superstars for a long time in this league.
I'm really glad you mentioned Steph and Kawhi and Harden because those three guys specifically, even as they, if they struggled or dealt with injury or weren't immediately super high impact guys, we saw with each of those guys instantly one skill they had that was elite, top of the league level. For Steph, it was shooting. For Kawhi, it was defense. For James Harden, it was isolation scoring. For all those guys had at least one thing that basically the moment they got to the NBA, they did at an all-star level. For Lonzo, that's passing and rebounding as a guard. He is actually a better rebounder as a guard comparatively than he is passer. But I think he has elite passing ability.
Nick, go back to your first time you saw him, because I was with you, and we had heard about Lonzo through high school, knew about the family and everything. But going to Pauley Pavilion in Los Angeles to see him play for UCLA, I took away from that, man, you were wildly impressed from the first time.
Because he played an older game than at the time. I think he was 18. It was very early in his freshman year at UCLA. He may have just turned 19. But he played a more mature game than you see from almost anyone in college, much less an early season freshman. He was not worried about keeping the ball in his hands. He was always worried about skipping the ball ahead, keeping the ball moving. And we saw that as a rookie. I would caution people on this when it comes to his counting stats. You mentioned 15, 16 points a game. Last year, the Lakers played the fastest pace in basketball. LeBron's never been on a team that was one of the 10 fastest paces.
Right.
So they will slow down somewhat. So they'll have fewer scoring opportunities. So some of his counting stats might not improve to the level that we thought that we would anticipate. But he was compared coming out of school to Jason Kidd. His rookie year, he had an almost identical rookie year to what Jason Kidd did. I mean, you can look at it right there. Kidd, point and a half more. Lonzo, a better rebounder. Almost a wash on assists. Field goal percentage, Kidd a little bit better. Three-point percentage, Lonzo a little bit better, but very similar. Kidd's second year in the league, he gave you 17, 7, and 10. Now, Jason Kidd's one of the 10 best point guards ever, a Hall of Famer. I'm not assigning that to him. But could Lonzo be a 13, 9, and 9 guy? That would be 15, 16 if they played at the pace they did last year? Sure. Is he a guy where the field goal percentage is going to go from 36 to 41 and the three-point percentage from 30 to 33? If those things happen, he is on the trajectory that we thought he would be on when he was taken number two in the draft.
What does he have to do to get better this year? We talked all last season about his shot, that you both had an issue with the way he was shooting, and that if he really wanted to improve, he was going to have to do that in the offseason and change it. It doesn't look like he's really changed his shot at all, but what is the thing that he needs to do to make his mark as a true, really talented guard, shooting guard?
Well, the Lakers, that's a very good question, because his shooting will be part of the conversation. The Lakers believe that he doesn't have to change his shot. So even if you don't have to change the fundamentals of your shot, the amount of time that you have to shoot the ball and the amount of shots. A lot of NBA players, they have some strange injuries, but you see a lot of them, they'll see the key tape that they use on their shoulder. A lot of guys have shoulder problems because this will be the most basketball they've ever shot the basketball. So the routine of shooting the basketball, I believe he has a shooting routine or a regiment that he's getting into now. Right. When you play with better players, it's about taking better shots also. So I believe his shot selection, it will improve. And also, the gravity of having LeBron on the court in a lot of those minutes.
Yeah.
So he's going to get some open shots. It's just a matter of him now getting to his spot. I believe he's a better shooter, and I believe the percentages will go up.
And listen, he was this 57th percentile isn't great, but it's better than his other percentiles. That's where he was on catch and shoot threes, okay? He's going to get more of those because of LeBron. He's going to have fewer off-the-bounce threes. But the thing that I think he needs to improve on more than anything is health. He missed 30 games last year. 30 games is a rookie. So, like, I think the other things we logically can believe will continue to improve. The health is the, to me, the biggest concern with Lonzo is the health, is the knee, is the issue, the lingering injury issues in a Western Conference that has a bunch of really tough point guards.
And the other part of this that we'll talk about is where this point guard situation and this combo matches up with others in the West. We will get to that when we talk about this again. But coming up on the other side is Carmelo Anthony. More about winning or filling the stat sheets. We'll break that down next on First Things First. This is the First Things First podcast, the episode brought to you by 4hims.com. It's time to discuss an issue that you may not want to hear. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. But good news, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace what you lost. How will you feel a year from now if there are bald spots creeping up? Well, here are your options. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? This is where 4hims.com comes in. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and an overall helpful product for men. That's right. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. There are no waiting rooms or weird doctor visits down a back alley. Just go to 4hims.com and take action today. It is so easy. Products will be brought right to your door. Here's how to do it. Order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/first. That's 4hims, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/first. 4hims.com/first. Moving on to Carmelo Anthony. The Thunder looking to try and trade the 10-time All-Star after just 1 year in OKC. The team reportedly allowed Melo to meet with both Houston and Miami ahead of his near and imminent departure from the team. Melo coming off a season in which he averaged a career-low 16.2 points a game. Nick, what will Melo's choice wherever he ends up? Tell us about what his priorities are. What's most important to him as he makes this decision?
Listen, if Carmelo Anthony picks the Miami Heat, then everything Chris has been saying about Melo is totally true. If Melo picks the Miami Heat, he will be deciding it is more important for me to play on my terms than to evolve at this late stage of my career and give myself the best chance to do the only thing I haven't done in basketball. Not in the NBA, the only thing in basketball. This guy won championship at Oak Hill. He won a championship one and done at Syracuse, Olympic gold medalist, first ballot Hall of Famer. He's been a scoring champion. He's been all NBA, 10-time all. What? The only thing he hasn't done is play in an NBA Finals and potentially win an NBA Finals. If he chooses the Miami Heat, he's saying playing the way I want to play is what's most important to me. If he chooses the Rockets, or you could argue the Lakers, even though I think they are probably the least likely of those three teams, then it would say to me, Carmelo is reprioritizing and Carmelo is open to making major adjustments that he didn't want to make not only last year, but the last time he played for Mike D'Antoni in New York when that went terribly sour. So I think this will, now maybe it'll turn out he picks he tries to have his cake and eat it too. I'm going to pick the good team and try to not change anything. That would surprise me. So I think whichever team he chooses will give us a window in to what his priorities are.
Well, Jenna, you're not going to be surprised about this because even if he selects the other two teams, I'm going to be right. Yeah, I'm not going to be wrong if he decides to go to the best team in Houston. I'm not going to be wrong if he decides to go play with LeBron because I got 15 years of video that speaks to what Melo is about. Melo is about getting buckets. You can't change your reputation at the end of your career on one decision. I think kind of the irony to it, and people aren't talking about this, for the minimum, I mean, he's getting totally brought out of his contract in OKC, but there's only three teams that they're talking about. Those are the three teams his buddies are on. In Miami with Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade's probably saying, that's my buddy and everything. In Houston with Chris Paul. In the third team, Los Angeles with LeBron. Don't people think that that's just kind of strange for a guy that scored as many points like that, that there's only three teams out there and those are the teams where his buddies are on those teams?
Well, I think people would think it's more strange if two of those teams weren't two teams that we thought were potential championship contenders. He's not joining the Warriors. We know that, right? So the next best contender is the Rockets, where his buddy is. Then there's the team with LeBron, which we think is probably going to get Kawhi, but is always at least a pseudo-contender as long as LeBron's there. I'd feel similarly if his buddies were with the Clippers, the Magic, and the Heat, and those were the only teams looking at him. Like,
I think there should be, with Melo, when we look at the other veteran players that are hired guns, guys coming in just to be spot-up shooters, they have more options than this. So for me, I'm a little surprised that the rest of the NBA, well, I shouldn't be surprised, because I believe Melo is limited as a player. And to think someone can play away for 15 years and then just all of a sudden just walk in the door and change, there's a reason why him and D'Antonio struggled in New York. Now, they might say, oh, those were different circumstances. Let me tell you something. When a guy is trying to tell you what to do and you decide I'm not going to do that. So I don't love the fact that Houston just decided to try to play some defense. They lose two defensive players, wing players, and now they're going to bring in Melo and think Melo's going to play defense. I think that people are They're really not speaking the truth as far as who Melo is. I got 15 years of video that would say that he's going to react a certain way.
Right, and so the reason I said that if he goes to Miami, I didn't say if he goes somewhere else, you will definitively be wrong. I said if he goes to Miami, you will definitively be right. The point that I'm making is...
I'm already right.
Even if
Melo wins the championship.
Wait a second, see.
As a supporting
player.
There
is no way to know... No one can be right or wrong about something that has not yet happened. The point is, the question is, will he adjust? Will he change who he is as a basketball player in year 16? If he goes to Miami, that will say to me, he don't want to change nothing. If he goes to Houston, I would think it says he's open to changing. Now, it doesn't mean he will have. We will have to wait and see how the games are played. What I think was tough for Melo, and what I think people have forgotten because of how the year in OKC went, was his last year in New York, this guy was 97th percentile catch and shoot threes. This guy was the second best mid-range isolation scorer in basketball. So he went to OKC thinking, why would I change anything? I'm still a 20-point-a-game guy. I'm still elite at the things I've always done. He's no longer that guy. That's why I think that there is more of an opportunity for him to change than there was last year.
I feel like we just had this conversation about Dwight Howard. Here's a guy who's been one way his whole career. I know you're talking basketball skill and personality or presence, but now all of a sudden in year 15, you feel like you're going to change your colors as to who you were. But where do you think Melo should go then to play?
I think he should go to Houston. Especially with them not having the wing players, the spot, catching ability to be able to shoot, every once in a while being able to isolate because, you know, the coach doesn't like isolation, but Harden does isolate, and they do utilize it. So I believe his talent is better served there, and they really have championship aspirations. But back to what you're saying as far as Dwight, he's a version of a Dwight Howard. It's like, Jenna, some person, they've been eating any type of food that they want to for 20 years. Then now all of a sudden they get into their 40s, and you know something? I'm going to start being conscious of my body. Well, let me tell you something. You have lost the advantage that people like Jenna and myself realized long time ago, that if you decide to, I'm going to watch what I eat while I'm younger, then you might be able to salvage your body. You can't get back all those years. Read articles about Carmelo Anthony. He was in Men's Health magazine in the middle of his career talking about, hey, what do you eat? He talked about McDonald's and things like that. All of a sudden, you can't just think that, oh, I'm going to try to eat right, and now I'm going to get back that athleticism. Once it's gone, it is gone.
I love the example you just used, that people, if they live a certain way, if they're smokers or they eat unhealthy, they tend to continue on that trajectory. Sometimes, though, if someone changes, you know why they do? Because they have a heart attack. Because they have a major life event that makes them say,
so getting waved,
I have to change.
He didn't have one.
That's where we disagree. This is the most embarrassing moment of Carmelo Anthony's basketball career. Without question. Someone paying you to go away is...
It might be embarrassing to you, but there is no evidence that it's embarrassing to him. We're thinking. I tell you a great story. When I got cut from Buddy Ryan, that was the worst days of my life. I changed. And the reason why I know, because when I went to Minnesota, I started doing different things. So it wasn't just the moment. It was something in my brain told me, I'm not going to just give that to Melo. He don't deserve that. He needs to do it, and then I'll give him credit. Show me some signs where Melo is doing this. You get paid. You get bought out. $27 million, go home. That ain't no bad day.
I didn't say it was a bad day, but it can be an embarrassing day. And you might be right that I shouldn't sit here, and I don't think I have, and definitively say I know he will do this. But I don't think it's fair to say definitively you know he will not. Like, we don't know how...
Last year, he had a chance to change in OKC. Now, you might say, oh, man, as a scorer, his numbers, as a post-up, all those things, isolation. But when he went to OKC, they did ask him a question. And he couldn't do different things. He is not a good role player. So he just had the opportunity in OKC. And there's a reason outside of the tax implication. There's a reason why they purchased his contract. There's a reason why he's waiving his no trade clause now. There's a reason why. Because OKC didn't want to play basketball with him anymore. So now he's at the crossroads as far as what I'm going to do. The only three teams right now that have a great deal of interest are teams that he's got three buddies on.
What's the bottom line? Nick is never going to stop eating at McDonald's.
What?
Coming up, Do the Rockets have to give? That was my takeaway.
Stop smoking for that matter.
Okay, well, we don't have to tell the audience that you smoke. That's not.
What?
No,
I'm transparent.
The Rockets have to give Clint Capela a max deal, do they? What's next on First Things First? Stevenson seemed like an unlikely teammate for LeBron before both signed with the Lakers. The two have had on-court friction over the years. Lance said, quote, it's actually funny that they're teaming up. CC, will Lance be a good teammate for LeBron?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the first practice. If it's me, I'm getting ready to torture him. I'm getting ready to butcher him in practice.
Wait, ain't no Lance or LeBron?
He's talking about LeBron torturing. LeBron torturing Lance.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lance tries.
There's no referees to be able to protect him. Just his introduction. It's good to see you, buddy. I like guys that can be competitive, but not be combative. Mm-hmm. And LeBron is bigger than the situation. Realize, me and this guy did battle. I want him on my side.
And listen, I don't think Lance is a particularly... I don't think he's a far above average basketball player. I think he's a little better than replacement level. They might have overpaid for him a little bit. But he's not a guy LeBron ever expressed any type of personal distaste for. We assigned that to him because Lance knew he's bigger than me, he's stronger than me, he's faster than me, he's better than me. The only way I'm going to give myself a chance is to try to get in his head. And he went every way he possibly could. Now LeBron's not got to worry about that. I think it's a fine pairing.
Adam Silver says the NBA is likely moving towards eliminating the one-and-done rule. However, the change would likely not happen before the 2021 season. Nick, where do you stand on this? Good move by the NBA?
I think it was an inevitable move. I think the one-and-done rule, whether you like it or not, I think it's wildly unfair. I think you can't use the football example where guys, there's one in 10,000 that are physically ready out of high school.
Less than that.
Okay, sure. I mean, one in 10,000 guys that make the NFL that were like that.
Yes.
I mean, it is like Adrian Peterson and maybe not even him. Okay.
No.
So the point is, there are obviously high school guys that are ready to go and have no interest in college. Now, some guys will think they're ready and it'll be terrible for them that they didn't go to college. But such is life when you're an adult. Like, sometimes you make decisions don't work out for you. This is a rule that has to be changed for fairness purposes and for practicality.
I wouldn't mind if the NBA went back to even a later stage. I don't think that we're doing the players a disservice if we moved it back. In the NFL, it's 3 years removed from high school. Right now, they're getting removed to one and done. So it's probably going to be 19 to 20. We're getting closer to 21. Like, I think it should be closer to 21 than the one and done. I think it really help out the young people mature, because a couple years of college is not going to hurt your future. Also, I believe it would help college basketball. The one and done has really hurt college basketball.
All right, finally, the NFL supplemental draft is today. Three players who could get picked: Western Michigan cornerback Sam Neill, Virginia Tech cornerback Adonis Alexander, and Mississippi State safety Brandon Bryant. Our own Chris Carter was a supplemental draft pick back in 87. Good year. CC, why is today so important for these players?
Well, it's important because they're going to get a head start on typically would have been them not being involved in the draft till 2019 in April. So they're going to get immediately, just like myself, they're going to get a chance to join the NFL roster, go in NFL locker room. So I believe that 1 year, and even though I was at a huge disadvantage because the supplemental draft didn't happen until September, so I had to join the team after missing training camp and a whole offseason of turmoil, but that 1 year, it led to me being a starter that following year. So being able to play in a number of games my rookie year, even though I missed all that camp, huge advantage over, typically, them still not being in the draft. The kids coming out in next year's draft, I know, besides the high draft picks, you would much rather get that NFL clock started and that NFL contract started, so now you're 1 year closer to being a free agent.
Even though it's moved up from where it was when you were drafted, I remember when I was covering the Houston Texans, they took a player, I think it was Xavier Suafilo, but whomever it was, his school was on the quarter system. And this was when you still, if you were on the quarter system as a college player, you were not there with the rest of the rookies. And they talked all offseason about how he was catching up. How that just missing the very beginning of the offseason, he was catching up. For the player or two, Beal or Alexander, maybe both of them, who are drafted, how far behind are they, not compared to what you had to go through, but compared to the other rookies drafted in the regular draft for whichever teams take them?
Well, they're light years behind. as far as the communication, what is the language, and the comfortability of being in a, from a college town to in a NFL city, which most of them are in. So that right there is hard to overcome that. Where do they stay? All these things, the other players, they've worked those things out. Where training camp will be, some of the things that they struggled with from what they knew in college to what they need to know in the pros. So most teams have given them a recipe for this is what we need you to know moving forward. So that is something that's hard for them to overcome. But with them being the high picks being defensive backs, and there being such a need for defensive backs, I think that teams will reach for them because you need slot corners and you need as many cornerbacks as possible.
One quick follow-up. For you, I'd imagine each rookie class, for the guys that make the team, have a bit of a formative bonding experience over the course from the draft, the rookie camp, all those things. When you got there, from a personal standpoint, did you almost feel like a man without a country? Like everyone, the cliques had already formed to a degree? Like how is that a real thing?
I was very, very fortunate because being a wide receiver, the quarterback at the time was Randall Cunningham. So he was the star. He immediately adopted me in. Jerome Brown, him and I were on all the All-American teams in college. He was the first-round pick of the Eagles. He immediately picked me up, moved me into his place. The next year, we got Keith Jackson. All three of us lived together. We were all three All-Americans.
So you had an infrastructure kind of built in.
Keith Byers, my college teammate, he was the star running back there. Reggie White, the minister of defense, he immediately began to mentor me. So my situation was very, very special.
Okay.
Popularest guy on the team.
I just drop a few names on you.
I saw that.
We're on the All-American team together. He was my
lunch with the Pope on Thursday.
It's full reveal. Black and Milds.
You're right.
I read my comments and get nervous.
Right.
All of us had a road getting here.
That's a good point.
Moving on to the Rockets offseason. Not much downtime for the folks in the front office. Restricted free agent Clint Capela reportedly turned down a 5-year, $85 million deal. According to reports, he was looking for something in the 4-year, $100 million range. So, Nick, do the Rockets need to do whatever it takes to keep Capela?
That's an intriguing question because they are absolutely keeping Clint Capela. I do not think they have to do whatever it takes because, unless depending on what you define whatever it takes by, because right now he's a guy. The way free agency sorted out, he doesn't have a lot of great options. And now he could take the qualifying offer, but, man, that would be – I'm a gambler, and that's a gamble that would terrify me.
Why?
Qualifying offer is 1 year, $4.7 million.
Sign me up. I'm taking it.
Really?
Absolutely.
Why?
How much money does Steven Adams make in
– $20 million a year.
$20 million. Well, how much does Tristan Thompson make?
$18 million a year.
Is Capela not very, very compatible to those type players?
But keep in mind, they just offered him $17 million.
I just asked, is he comparable to those type players?
He's better than Tristan, and I think he's certainly better defensively than Steven Adams.
There we go. That right there would speak for itself. Like, you're already paying centers this amount. And also the length of that contract. Man, you signed a 5-year deal. Man, you might not sign another contract. So for me, I'd much rather take the risk. When I was at this point in my career, I signed a 1-year deal. I'm going to bet on myself because that's the gamble that I'm willing to take. I don't want to, especially a deal that I'm not happy with, I'm definitely not going to sign for 5 years.
Let me just real quick, though. I think that's a lot of people's reaction, but you gotta tease the math all the way out. So let's say he signs the 1-year, $5 million deal, and then next year gets a 4-year, $100 million deal, which is the max. The max he's eligible for is $25, $26 million a year. So then he will be getting $105 million over 5 years. You don't get this year back. I think this thing's going to end up landing at about 4 years, about $80 million. So that ends up being a $20 million average over 4 years, as opposed to if he takes a qualifying offer and then gets the 5 for $100, a $21 million average over 5 years. Like, and you have the locked in security. Because we've seen, I saw Nerlens Noel turn down something to take a qualifying offer. Now he's playing for $2 million.
I think they had a different health history at this point in their career.
They
had a different, their resumes were not the same. The only thing was the same was they decided to do the same.
And the offer. He was offered $17.5 million.
But you're assuming he, A, stays healthy, and B, puts up the same numbers. How critical is it for Capela that
Had any health problems with him. We're not concerned about his health. He's very, very athletic. A young player like this, when you don't have the clear, defined stars, all right? So everyone's in this big three thing. Let's, man, we got to get three stars. That's not available everywhere. So now you got to throw in some stuff. You got to throw in a center, which OKC has done with Paul George. Let's go Russell and Stephen. He's our third. And there's other teams that have had to do the same because there's only one Klay, Steph, and KD, Draymond. So everyone else has to throw their version of it, and typically you're coming up with a player like Capella as your third star.
I just think that your situation, I think, is different in that the money that he is being offered here is so enormous. And again, I'm not saying he's got to take 5 years, 85, but I personally would be shocked if he ends up taking the qualifying offer. I think this is they're going to come to him and say, listen, here is what you will make over the next 4 or 5 years, depending on its 4-year or 5-year deal. You cannot forget the fact that the Rockets play in Texas, where there are no state taxes, which on a contract like this matters. Here is the security of it. If you take the qualifying offer and you even want to do the Lloyd's of London, insure yourself against your future deal, what that's going to cost you, it would be, we haven't seen a player of Capella's caliber not end up reaching an agreement. Sometimes it takes, in recent memory, sometimes it takes into September, but there's also no competing offers. Like, Dallas took themselves out of the game when they signed DeAndre Jordan.
Is he worth the money on the open market? Sure, he is, but the Rockets probably know that as well, mm-hmm. and are figuring they could deal and negotiate with him. How important is he to the success that they had last year on this team?
Chris Paul is not the defender that he was. Harden just now woke up and realized that defense, it's legal. You can play some. All right? They just lost two of their top four defenders.
Yes.
Capella is their best defender. Like, he is critical to what they do. They are not going to be able to outscore Golden State. You got to be able to get some stops. You got to be able to get some switches. You got to be able to have a center that can switch to the one, to the two, to the three, to the four, and be able to hold up in spurts. They have that with him. So I believe that he's just as critical as last year them getting Chris Paul. And it's less of a risk than giving Chris Paul that max contract that they gave him.
Listen,
based on Nick's math with the way he's going to deteriorate, you better get an insurance policy.
No, Chris, right. Chris, absolutely. Chris Paul's deal is they're paying him 4 years, but they're really paying him for the first two, and then the back end of it's a bonus. Clint Capella is, if the Rockets were to lose him, the thing is they won't, but if they were to lose him, forget them being the second best team in basketball. Like, that's gone. He is the key to their defense. The reason that I think the wing defenders, a reason Mbamute's losses are somewhat overstated, is because they have a great defensive point guard in Chris Paul, a great do-everything defender in PJ Tucker, and one of the best rim defenders in basketball in Clint Capella. He is their most important defender. There's a reason when we talk about them last year, we don't say when CP3 and Harden play. We say when CP3, Harden, and Capella play, they were 53-7.
I'm looking forward to P.J. Tucker being that defender because he's going to have to guard LeBron with no type of help, not throwing all those bodies at him. So I think they're making a mistake because I don't think P.J. Tucker can hold up as a defender all season long. That's it.
Okay.
All right, we'll leave it at that. That's where we're leaving it, what he said. Hey, coming up, is Rajon Rondo bad for Lonzo Ball? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, the Bills running back LeSean McCoy is under investigation from the NFL and Georgia police following a home invasion at a residence occupied by his former girlfriend. The woman's attorney alleges she was attacked in her sleep by a man demanding gifts and cash she had previously received from McCoy. A picture was posted by her friend on Instagram showing her brutal injuries and blaming McCoy for the incident. The picture has since been deleted, reportedly at the request of the woman's attorney. The police have not named any suspects. As for the Bills, they say they're continuing to gather information. McCoy put out the following statement regarding the Instagram post. For the record, the totally baseless and offensive claims made against me today on social media are completely false. Furthermore, I have not had any direct contact with any of the people involved in months. Cece, I'll start with you. What was your reaction when you heard this story?
I was shocked by the pictures. I hate to say it. I'm not shocked by the story. I'm not going to say that I've gotten callous over the gravity of the pitchers and everything, but I have been around the NFL for a long time. So I would say it's hard to shock me. It was kind of like this started with the Ray Rice video. Not saying this situation, but like this Shady McCoy situation, it started like, say for instance, if you had saw that video first, like the way we saw the pictures first. Now, I'm not saying he's guilty of what Ray Rice did, but the magnitude of it starting that way compared to it starting allegedly that, but we saw the pictures first. So it was, that would take anyone back. But I had to ask myself the question, why are NFL players involved in so many violent crimes? And just this offseason, you know, the Super Bowl was in February. In 5 months, if you look at the number of players that have been current players and former players that have been arrested, I'm not talking about DUI. I'm not talking about stuff like that. I'm talking about assaulting a woman, the elderly. I'm talking about from Alton Smith in March, his arrest for assaulting a woman, to Kellen Winslow Jr. last month, assault, accused of assault, rape of an elderly person. Like burglary, like, I mean, these things are amounting, like.
Brandon what? Browner last week.
Attempted murder.
Attempted murder is what he was, they added the charge.
Kidnapping.
I mean, he's been arrested. He's facing life in prison.
Yeah, so these allegations, if I look at them with all these other things that people are accused of, man, to me, man, the NFL, they definitely have a violence problem. Like, and this is one of the reasons that I was so upset about Colin Kaepernick and his inability to play in the league. Well, people said, well, this got nothing to do with Cap. Well, the ability to hold a job. All these other guys were gainfully employed by the NFL. These owners look past. It wasn't like some of these guys, Alton Smith, how many times he got to be arrested? He's got gun charges. He's got assault charges. He had so many chances, but a guy like Colin, he took a knee. He couldn't play. So NFL owners, I believe they're very, very hypocritical of the way that they employ the players. They look beyond a lot of different things. But we as fans, we shouldn't just let this go. We shouldn't just accept this as, you know, this is normal off-season behavior. The number of violent crimes that the NFL and their former players have been involved in is at an alarming rate. I'm shocked about that.
Listen, I think it's important for the audience to understand the timeline of events here in this specific incident. Because I echo everything Chris just said, but I want people to understand here. LeSean McCoy and this woman were involved in a relationship. He ends up moving her into a house he has in Georgia. Over the course of the last year, they have an elongated dispute about her vacating that house. Now, those are, I don't know who's telling the truth there, but it would appear they had a court date scheduled yesterday about him trying to evict her from the house. When he went to training camp or OTAs, I should say, in June, and she went to a family member's graduation, he hired friends, family, and some other people to try to just take her stuff out of the house. She saw it on a home security system, had it stopped.
Called the police.
They have had an elongated dispute.
And they also have a kid.
They had a relationship. Supposedly broken off the relationship, whatever it is. And now, according to the police report, the night before they have a court date, someone comes into the house. I thought it was noteworthy in the police report. They said no forced entry. So maybe that means someone left a door unlocked, or maybe that means somebody had the alarm code. And the person who comes in the house asked for specific items. Again, the police say it was a target. It wasn't a random home invasion, just nice houses on a block. It was, we're coming here to this house for these specific items. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be it could have been one of the movers, totally unrelated. And LeSean, when he was there, saw items. Like, I want to come back and get them. Or it could be what the friend is implying, if not saying, which is, LeSean sent someone there to go get the items. We don't know what happened there. We do know that the woman, and the pictures would lead you to believe, she was pistol whipped and brutally injured, and a second woman there was injured to a lesser degree. I don't know if LeSean McCoy did this, right? We don't know. But that's the timeline of what he's being accused of. To Chris's point, and what I think the audience has to understand, and this is why Chris and I... And it's very interesting working with you because you take such intense pride in the NFL. Like, you take ownership almost of the shield and of the league, but you are also very honest about what and who is in that locker room.
Yes. And I mean, it's not your right to play in the NFL. It's a privilege. Like, there's less than 20,000 people that have ever done this job. Like, we act like there's millions of them. This is our 99th season in the NFL. And there's only that many players to play. Yes, I feel it's my obligation to be honest about what I've seen throughout the years.
And the reason I bring it up, and I just want to, the audience to understand, correct me if you disagree with me, and this is what's so unsettling, whether LeSean McCoy did this or not, or had it done or not, or orchestrated it or not. There, for every one of these, there's a list of guys that have had some type of incident this offseason involving the police. Some type of, whether it's from DUI all the way up to, like, attempted murder. How many guys do the fans think have been involved in something similar, and it doesn't raise the level of the police, it doesn't raise the level of the media, and it doesn't... We know that women who are victims of domestic violence in large part don't report it initially, if ever. We know women who are victims of sexual violence very often, more often they're not to not report it than to report it. So when you see... And we also know people, by the way, on average, drive drunk more than 50 times before they're arrested for it one time. So when you see a half dozen guys arrested for DUI, another half dozen arrested for some type of assault on or sexual crime on a female, and there's only 1,800 guys in the league, you do wonder and you do ask yourself, how often is this happening that we don't know about? But you know who might know? Teammates, coaches, GMs, to your point about Cap, the people that might have been preventing him from coming in the league, knowing some of this is in their locker room. Go ahead,
you
Jenna.
You said, CC, that the NFL has a violence problem, and I'm intrigued by that. And it's a violent sport. You're asked to basically go out with all the strength you have and all the muscle you have and take out the opponent in front of you, and aggression and all of it. But talk to me about the correlation between... You played that sport. You're not a violent man. But there is some correlation between the sport, and this is a long list. This is the offseason. This isn't in the last year. I mean, that's in a short period of time. You know, as someone who does, as Nick said, take such pride over the NFL and the league, having a league that you played in for so long, tell me about the correlation in there, and what does it say about the NFL?
Well, there has to be some type of similarities, because when I look at the police bloggers, I don't see as many NHL, Major League Baseball, and NBA players being involved in the same thing. Now, typically, we have the same type of upbringing as far as playing in sports. Our ability to be able to think on the move and be high achievers. So what is the difference? Is it the violence of football that correlates into off-the-field violence in the players? I think it's something that they should look at. I believe that playing football, especially playing at a high level, I can only see the numbers, that there would have to be something between how the game is played and the overall behavior. What I'm not going to do is just become tone deaf to the pitchers and to the stories.
And I think that my hypothesis would be multi-layered. One is, I think a violent game might attract some violent people. People that are naturally, unrelated to football, naturally inclined to violence.
I believe that is true.
Right. Like, just logic would dictate. You're naturally inclined to violence. This is a place where you are encouraged to hit people. You are encouraged to let some of that aggression out. I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is something you said last week. I don't even remember what we were talking about. But you said there are two Chris Carters. The one you're going to meet when you were playing. The one you're going to meet in your day-to-day life. And the person I had to become once I crossed those white lines. The mental state I had to get in order to go do that. And I think for some people, those lines start to blur.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I think it's hard to actually become two people. And that the longer... And so, I think that would dictate.
And I think that it becomes harder because you're such a regimented person. And every summer, I get used to football. I get used to being able to take out my aggression. I used to be people take out their aggression on me. And doing that through 4 years of high school, 3 years of college, and 16 years in the league, I had to find something when I was 37 that I could put that aggression into. And that's what I see, because a lot of this list of players are former players. So now, what do they do with that aggression? You have to be able to find a spot for it. I'm very, very fortunate I have been able to find one.
All right. We'll have to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Back here, First Things First, NBA analyst Sarah Kustok joins us. It's always going to be a good time when Sarah's
here. Not sick of me yet.
Are you kidding?
You might be.
No.
But as long as, as long as
you guys got to change the copy and everything. You guys go NBA analyst, also, NFL sideline reporter for Fox.
Reporter.
I mean, shoot.
She's expanding portfolio.
Yeah, she's like Cardi B. She's dripping in money.
I love
it. That's right.
Can I rap like Cardi B? Right?
Oh, that's, you were close. Cardi B is one of my favorites. Yeah. That is correct. You got it right. I can't believe you got it right, but you got it right.
Bet you didn't think you'd be compared to Cardi B on First Things First. Lakers suddenly NBA topic again. It's been a few minutes. The kind of cool where you can talk point guard battle in the offseason, that kind of cool. Lonzo Ball enters year two. Rajon Rondo just got signed to a one-year deal. It is Lonzo versus Rondo. Will it be a mentor relationship or a I-want-the-starting-job relationship? Head coach Luke Walton had nothing but praise for the young point guard.
Well, I think it's going to be great for Lonzo. You know, Lonzo, to me, is a player that he even shines more with the more talent that's around him because he's unselfish, he's a winner, and he wants to get, you know, other people involved all the time. So, you know, when you get shooters and all-stars around him, I think that just brings out what he does best, and he's going to continue to develop his personal game as well. So, obviously, between the injuries, and how much we struggled last season when he was out, we felt like it was important for us to get another point guard that we could rely on when, you know, if he were to continue, you know, dealing with those type of injuries. And we feel very confident that Rondo is that guy. We also think Rondo can really help teach Lonzo the NBA game and the nuances of the point guard position because they both play the game in an unselfish manner. So they're going to be a good mix for each other.
Sarah, you watched Lonzo play last year. You heard all the criticism just of his shot and whatnot, and also it was his first year getting used to it. What are realistic expectations now as he enters the second year?
I wish we could look at Lonzo without the outside distraction of his father. And you look at the numbers Lonzo put up last year. He was 10-7-7,
yep.
A very solid year. He played 52 games, so I think when we look into this season, and obviously with the torn meniscus at this point, just him being healthy, number one priority. I love the way Lonzo plays. Does he need to improve his shot? Absolutely.
Yes.
But what Luke Walton said is 100% true. He's unselfish. He moves the ball. He, to me, thrives under pressure. He plays much better with the talent around him because he understands where to get the ball, who to get the ball to. I think this addition of Rajon Rondo is going to be excellent for him. One, because of the mind and the willingness that I believe Rondo will have to help him. If you remember two seasons back when Rajon Rondo was with the Chicago Bulls,
yes.
Those young guys loved him because he was able to mentor them. And there was a lot of noise coming out of Chicago, and obviously it was a turbulent season.
Yeah, they had some tough moments in there.
The veterans didn't like him as much as the young players did.
As much as the rookies, because he took the rookies under his wing. He was able to help them along. And he had an excellent postseason until he hurt his hand. I mean, the Bulls really turned the corner because of him. But I believe that the competition will help get Lonzo better. I believe the film study, how diligent Rondo is in what he looks at and tendencies of the other teams, how to help him scout, how to understand what to look at. In whole, I think this will be an excellent thing for Lonzo Ball, and I believe that Lonzo is a player who will embrace that and embrace this challenge.
Yeah, Rondo's got a couple things on his resume that people might not like. They might not like the Carlisle thing, him getting the backcourt violation, not calling the play for the coach, but to me, he's been involved in positive things. Look at the big three in Boston when he was there. As the young guy, man, they relied on him to bring those guys together because there were some personalities. Ray Allen, KG, and Paul Pierce, they were not thinking of the same. All three of them were individual stars in their own right. Ray got traded there. He was a star. Paul Pierce, that was his team that he had to kind of relinquish some of that control to KG with his big personality. But Rondo, man, Rondo, when people talk about it, even when you look at the potential beef between Ray Allen and the rest of them, man, they called on Rondo a lot to bring them together.
And so, by the end of that era, Rondo was their best player.
Yep.
Absolutely.
By the end of it, Rondo was the best guy.
And I think that people forget what pro sports is about, and pro sports is about competition. The Lakers need a good backup point guard. Lonzo also needs to be pushed physically and mentally. That's why you bring Rondo there. I don't see any negatives out of him being there. You should have someone as the backup who can be a starter. You know why? Because it's a real threat to the player compared to bringing in a guy who's a career backup. Lonzo's not going to be, okay, listen, y'all can tell me what you want to. I'm getting ready to start because that guy, I'm way better than him. He's never been a starter. You can't say that with Rondo. So I believe it's a great addition to Lonzo in his repertoire, what he's going to be able to do by adding someone like Rondo who can get in his head and explain a lot of the things about basketball from a point guard's
And you particularly need a very competent backup when the guy in front of him missed 30 games last year.
Yes.
And so but let's just assume health, because let's wish for help for the whole league. You now have 48 minutes. The Rockets talked last year, we're going to have 48 minutes of A-plus point guard play. The Lakers now have 48 minutes of what I would imagine will be good to very good point guard play. Like, not what the Rockets have. But Jenna raised an interesting question in the morning meeting, because she said the Western Conference, how does this point guard situation stack up to the point guards out west? So I kind of, listen, Rockets, Golden State, Portland, OKC. Those are the four best.
Yep.
But after that, so like, what's New Orleans' situation? Drew Holiday's great, but he's really a shooting guard. Yep. Like, he was at his best, and they just lost Rondo. Denver, I like Jamal Murray. Don't necessarily love their depth. And then Utah's Rubio. The Spurs, Parker's gone. It's DeJounte Murray. Minnesota, Jeff Teague. Like, could you make the argument the Lakers go into this year with Lonzo as is, with Rondo as is, with the fifth best point guard situation out west? Like, I think you probably could. So it's not... We focus on the shooting, and the shooting has to get better. Like, people say, well, Jason Kidd's shooting can get better till much later in his career. Jason Kidd was a sturdier player, was bigger
yes.
to a degree, and a generational talent. Lonzo is...
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
We throw those around like they're just Krispy Kreme donuts. You know, everybody's one of those. Like,
no.
Jason Kidd was a phenomenal athlete, which ended up being a phenomenal basketball player.
Kidd was the best player on back-to-back finalists. And then was, in year, like, close to 20, or year 15, was the point guard and NBA champion. So he doesn't have to quite be Jason Kidd in order to be very successful.
I want to see Lonzo finish better at the basket
yes.
and at the rim, because he does not shoot as well from the perimeter, that
mm-hmm.
he needs to improve. But also, I think that will come with time, with strength. And to me, that's one of the aspects. If he has the ability to be a threat in getting to the rim consistently, that will help him playing alongside LeBron James. I mean, we know that LeBron is going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit as well. So he needs to continue to be able to understand how to play off the ball when needed.
Yeah, let's look at three things since his rookie year ended. Now, no rookie is under any scrutiny. We haven't had any rookie in the topic bar, have we? Any other rookie we're talking about?
No.
No. So, for me, Lonzo, he handled the pressure. But let's just look since the offseason. We know he had surgery on his meniscus and everything, and I believe that to be he will be healthy. But offseason meeting with Magic Johnson watching film, added LeBron James, and then now a backup point guard, potential sub-starter in Rondo. I believe the Lakers organization really helped him.
Talk to me a little bit about pace. Last year, the Lakers were such a fast team. LeBron wasn't used
to
that.
That's a key thing. And when we evaluate Lonzo, and I'll be quick here, we need to not just do the counting stats. Because he was 10-7-7 last year. They were the fastest pace in basketball. What's that
mean?
Yeah,
and I immediately was like, okay, let's do this now. They're going to be, okay, it's his second year. He should probably be anywhere 14 to 16 points a game.
But they're not going to have as many scoring opportunities. They're going to, not only has LeBron never been on the fastest team in the league, he's never been on a team that was top 10 in pace. He doesn't play fast. So his counting stats won't take the jump you might expect. So watch his percentages, whether it's field goal percentage or even assist and rebound rate. Now, speaking of percentages, last point I'll make, whether it's Rondo or Lonzo, they might be the fifth best point guard situation in the West. They are the single worst point guard free throw situation in the NBA. Both these guys are career sub 60% free throw shooters. That's one thing you got to watch. Late in games, you typically inbound it to your point guard. Neither one of these guys has shown the ability to hit those. That's one small thing to watch for both of them.